So what happens if I go to Eretz Yisrael and I follow the psak of the Beis Yosef, which is also the psak of the Mishneh Berurah, which was also the psak of the Pa'as HaShulchan? It was the psak of the consensus for many, many years, until recently when it became more popular to follow the psak of the Chacham Tzvi, who says you only keep one day when you're visiting Eretz Yisrael. Let's say I'm of the opinion that I should be keeping 2 days of Yom Tov in Eretz Yisrael because I'm legitimately a Ben Chutz La'aretz. I'm not somebody who counts myself as a Ben Eretz Yisrael as much as I would want to be there. Right now, the bottom line is I'm not. So the question becomes, would I be allowed to ask someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael, legitimately, would I be allowed to ask them to do malacha for me on Yom Tov Sheni? Or is that considered similar to Amira Lenachri? The Shulchan Aruch says, the same way Amira Lenachri is not permissible on Shabbos or Yom Tov, just like we're not allowed to ask a non-Jew on Shabbos or Yom Tov to do anything for us, so too we are not allowed to ask on Yom Tov Sheni. Yom Tov Sheni is just as serious, almost, as a regular day of Yom Tov, even though it's only rabbinic, even though it's only midirabbanan. The prohibition of Amir Lenachri applies equally on Yom Tov Rishon as it does on Yom Tov Sheni. So, would it be the same to ask a Jew who is not observing Yom Tov? That's a strange case. Would I be allowed to ask a Jew who's not observing Yom Tov to do something for me? What would be another application of that? Anybody know? Forget about Yom Tov Sheni for a minute. Let's say in the summer months when I'm Mekabel Shabbos early. So I'm Mekabel Shabbos at 5:30, but Shabbos really doesn't come in until 7:45. So I'm in a position where I'm able to be Mekabel Shabbos early, but there are many of my neighbors and friends who come home later from work, have younger children, whatever it is, they're going to be Mekabel Shabbos at the Zman and not early. So the question is, during that interim period, if let's say I come home from shul and I already davened Friday night, I said Mizmor Shir, I was Mekabel Shabbos upon myself earlier than I had to, and now I realize I forgot to turn on the air conditioner, I forgot to turn on the lights, would I be allowed to ask a neighbor to do that for me when that neighbor has not yet accepted Shabbos upon him or herself? That's a similar kind of question. It gets a little bit more complicated. Let's say on Shabbos I do not open bottles. Right? There's a big machlokas whether you're allowed to open bottles on Shabbos, not so clear. Let's say my family custom is that you're not allowed to open bottles. What's the issue? Big question. Some say it might be makabe patish, whatever. It may be a violation of a malacha. It's not clear exactly what it is, but it's a big discussion. Some say it's totally fine. Some say it's totally not. So if you're from the group of people who say that you're not allowed to, but I have someone at my table who legitimately follows their sock, which is that they are allowed to, would I be allowed to ask that person to open the bottle for me? Or let's say, for example, if I'm part of a Hasidish community where they end Shabbos with the Zman of Rabbeinu Tam, and they keep Shabbos very late, and they have a long Shalosh Shittos, and now it's an hour and a half after Shabbos is over, but they're still going. Would I be allowed to ask that person to do something for me when I, as a person who's not a member of the community, has already ended Shabbos and said Havdalah? All of those are very important questions, and I don't think the answer is going to be the same in all of those cases.
Yeah, I feel like this is different. I know someone in their community who, like, we have a place Eruv completely.
Yeah.
He doesn't follow Eruv, so like his mom will carry his telly.
Uh-huh. So that's a very interesting story you raise, because there's a story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that there was a boy in Yerushalayim who lived in Shari Chesed, who decided for himself that he was not going to use the Eruv. So one Shabbos, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach notices that the boy is walking down the street together with his father. His father was in his 70s, was holding a big stack of chairs, and the son is walking right next to him. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach stops him in the street and he says, "What's going on? Your father's 70 years old, you're 25. How come your father's carrying a stack of chairs?" He says, "Well, we have a kiddush down the block and they needed extra chairs, so we went home, we've got some chairs." So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, "No, I'm not asking where you're going with the chairs. I'm asking why are you allowing your father to carry the chairs instead of you?" And he said, "Well, I don't carry in the Erev." So he said, "Because you decided you want to be machmir and not carry in the Erev, you think you're allowed to violate kibud av va'em and make your father schlep the chairs for you?" So it's a difficult balance. And by the way, that's something that you have to think about in general. Every chumrah that you take upon yourself, chumras are very nice, but every chumrah that you take upon yourself has a price that you're going to have to pay for it. That's the way it is in life. There's a trade-off, right? So let's say, for example, a chumrah that we're familiar with is, the Gemara says in Hilchas, in Maseches Nida, that women today took upon themselves that they are more machmir in Hilchas Nida than they were in the days of the Mishnah. They wait longer than they otherwise would have had to. Whatever, you'll get there when you get there. But that's the halacha. We are machmir, way, way beyond what the Torah expects us to do. Now, you'll say, it's beautiful, Taras HaMishpacha, it's so nice, you bring Kedusha into your house, it's wonderful. Yeah, but you're also paying a price for that. What price are you paying? There's also a mitzvah for a husband and wife to be married to each other and to be interacting with one another and to be having responsibilities toward one another in physical ways. So you're, again, the Gemara assumes that that's a fair trade-off. But understand that every chumrah that is instituted always has a price that you have to pay on the other side. And you really have to think carefully, is this really worthwhile? Is this something that is a price that is worthy of paying for the chumrah that I want to do? So that's an important question. So here, the question begins, let's say by Shabbos. When I'm mekabel Shabbos early, would I be allowed to ask somebody who has not yet accepted Shabbos to do a malacha on my behalf? I come home from shul Friday night, I see that the lights are not on, the air conditioner is not set. Would I be allowed to ask my neighbor, when it's still light outside, to then come into my home and do everything that needs to be done? Good question? Okay. So we go to a Gemara Maseches Shabbos. The Gemara says that I'm not allowed to hire workers to do work for me on Shabbos. Now, what does that mean? It means if I have a field and I need people to work the field, I'm not allowed to have people work in the field. It also means, says the Gemara, that I'm not allowed to have someone, if let's say I have a field in Kansas. Now, I'm not going to have anybody work the field, but I'm afraid I live in New York and I'm not going to be there for Shabbos. So I'm concerned that maybe someone's going to come steal all my produce on Shabbos. So I need to have somebody watching over the field. Says the Gemara, you're not allowed to have a worker. That's also called work. But the Gemara says, I'm allowed to make a deal with another Jew who happens to live in Kansas, right near my field. What's the deal? He owns a piece of property in New York, right near my house. I own a piece of property in Kansas, right near his house. I'm allowed to say to him, Shmar li ve'ashmar lach. You watch over my field over Shabbos, I'll watch over your piece of property here in New York over Shabbos, and everybody will be fine. I'm not paying you, you're not paying me. We're each doing each other a favor that's mutually beneficial. So the Gemara says that that would be permissible. Now, why is that permissible? In the end of the day, he's doing the work for you. Along comes the Rashba. The Rashba is one of the great Rishonim. And the Rashba says that the reason for that is because, Kilomar, afa pishuhu ena yachal leilech l'sham, even though I'm in New York right now and I'm unable to be in Kansas, I wouldn't be able to walk there on Shabbos. It's too far. It's out of the tchum, says the Rashba. Since theoretically, I would be able to figure out a way to be there, therefore, it's not considered to be a problem because I myself could have figured out a way to be there. Had I set up a hut right next to my field, I would have been able to watch it myself. Since I could have done it myself, theoretically, I'm allowed to have someone else do it. Says the Rashba. And from here we learn, D'Yisrael shekibel alav Shabbos kodem shechashecha. A Jew that accepts Shabbos early before it's dark outside. Mutar lomer li'Yisrael chaveiro lasas lo malacha plonis. I'm allowed to go to my friend who was not yet mekabel Shabbos, and I'm allowed to ask that person to do a malacha for me. Why? Why? What's the logic? Finish off the sentence. How is that similar to the case of the Gemara? Was I not clear? The end of the sentence is, because I would have had the opportunity, had I chosen not to accept Shabbos early, I could have done malacha myself. So I made a decision this week that I want to keep Shabbos early. But since theoretically I could have done the malacha myself, therefore I'm allowed to ask a Jew to do the malacha who hasn't yet accepted Shabbos, which is similar, says the Rashba, to that case of the Gemara, where had I set up shop in Kansas, I would have been able to watch over my field myself, and therefore I'm allowed to ask the person who is a resident there to watch over it for me. That's the association that he makes. Niran, one of the other Rishonim, disagrees, but the Shulchan Aruch accepts the opinion of the Rashba, and he says exactly what the Rashba says, that if I accept Shabbos early, I'd be allowed to then go ahead and ask somebody. If I come home and I see the lights aren't on, I'd be allowed to ask somebody to come and do the malacha on my behalf because they have not yet accepted Shabbos, and that would be acceptable. There's a lot to talk about in that Rashba, a lot to understand, but it's just on a very basic, simple level. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rashba that that would be permissible. So let me give you a fascinating extension that the Prima Gadim writes in Shulchan Aruch. Prima Gadim says, a Kohen is not allowed to go into a cemetery. Not only is he not allowed to go into a cemetery, he's not allowed to go into a house that has a dead body in it either. Right? It's a big question whether a Kohen is allowed to visit a hospital. Every hospital has dead bodies, unfortunately, every day. So is a Kohen allowed to go into a hospital where he knows that by entering the building, he's probably going to come, not in contact with a dead body, but somewhere under the roof of the building there's going to be a dead body? And these are all questions you have to think about. But now you'll say, you don't have to think about them. Why? Why? Because even if you are from a family of Kohanim, there's no prohibition on women to become Tameh, right? Female Kohanim, any Kohanim in the room? No? Oh, so you're allowed to go to a cemetery. You shouldn't have to, but you're allowed to go to a cemetery. The prohibition is only on male Kohanim. So you'll say, so why am I even mentioning this about the hospital? You know why? It's Hashem, someday you're going to be pregnant. It's Hashem, it's possible that you're going to be pregnant with a boy. My wife did it 6 times with boys. We specialize in boys. So, this is a big shaila. If you are pregnant with a boy, are you allowed to go to a cemetery? Or is that considered as if you are bringing a male Kohen into a cemetery? How do you like that? Interesting.
That's a question.
Huh?
That's a question.
That is a question. So I get the question all the time from pregnant women who are not from a family of Kohanim. Am I allowed to go to a funeral? Am I allowed to go to a cemetery? The answer to that is yes. Some say Al-Pi Kabbalah, whatever it is, but the halacha says it's absolutely permissible for a woman who is pregnant to go to a cemetery or to attend a levaya. There's no problem at all. What they don't know to ask is, if I am married to a Kohen and the child that I am now pregnant with is a boy, am I allowed to go to a cemetery? That is a real serious question. That is a major shaila that is discussed in the Shach and all the other poskim. It's a big, big shaila, not for now, but that's the shaila. So we know that a Kohen, a male Kohen, is not allowed to go and come in contact with a dead body. Says the Prima Gadim, would a Kohen be allowed to ask somebody, let's say I have my suitcase that got stuck in somebody's house, and now there's a dead body in the house, but I need the suitcase, I got to go to the airport, so what do? Of course, I can't go in the house myself. Can I ask somebody else to go in the house for me and take it out on my behalf? So the Prima Gadim writes as follows, Lefize. Mutar l'kohen lomar l'Yisrael leilech l'makom tumas meis u'lahavi lo misham chafetzav. I'm allowed to go in. I'm sorry, I can't go in myself, and I'm allowed to instruct a non-kohen to go in for me. And he learns that from this halacha that the Shulchan Aruch says. Just like the Shulchan Aruch says, when I was not mekabel Shabbos, but you were, I'm allowed to ask you to do some activity for me that I myself am not allowed to do. So to hear, he says, if a non-kohen is going to be instructed to go in and get the Kohen's suitcase from the house that has a dead body in it, that would be something that is permissible because he sees that as an extension of this halacha. What about in the other direction? I'll take your question in a minute. Says the Rama, what about in the other direction? Like we said, you're from a Hasidish community and you keep Rabbeinu Tam, and even beyond Rabbeinu Tam, your Shalashudas goes for another 2 hours after Shabbos is over. Many of the communities do that, right? So what happens in that interim period? If you're from my community, you made Havdalah, the second Shabbos is over. Now, down the block, we have Hasidim who are having Shalashudas and the lights go out. Can they call me over and say, Shechter, the lights went out, can you please turn them on? Says the Ramah, the same way that you're allowed to do it at the beginning of Shabbos, that if I was Mekabel Shabbos early, I'm allowed to go to my neighbor and ask him to turn the lights on. So too says the Ramah, at the end of Shabbos, on the other end, if I decide that I want to observe Shabbos longer than I have to, I'm allowed to call somebody else over to my house to do a malacha that I myself would not be allowed to do yet because I did not make Havdalah. That is what the Ramah makes the extension, which seems like a natural extension from what the Shulchan Aruch says. Along comes the Levush. The Levush lives in the 1500s, same time as the Beis Yosef and the Ramah. He says, no, no, no. Before Shabbos is not the same as after Shabbos. And he makes a whole distinction. The bottom line is the Ramah says that it would be the same. And the same way you're allowed to ask before Shabbos, so too you are allowed to ask at the end of Shabbos, which now leads us to the next question, which is, what about when it comes to Yom Tov Sheni? Would all of this apply to Yom Tov Sheni as well? Or would you say, no, the halacha by Yom Tov Sheni would be a completely different story? This is a discussion that is had in the Birkei Yosef. Birkei Yosef is the Chidah who quotes two of the great Svardish Gedolim who disagreed about this point. I'm going to read you what he says. Ben Chutz La'aretz she'omed be'eretz Yisrael. If you have somebody who is a resident of Chutz La'aretz but is spending Yom Tov in Eretz Yisrael, Kasav Hamari Kash, he quotes from one of the Gedolim, she'mutter lo lomar leben Eretz Yisrael she'yaser lo malacha b'Yom Tov Sheni. He first quotes the Mari Kash who said, just like by Erev Shabbos, if I accepted Shabbos early, I'd be allowed to ask someone to do malacha for me, so to here, I'd be allowed to do the same. On the other hand, he then quotes other Achronim who say that that would not be permissible. And he says, the Mahari Molcho, I don't know who that is, but he quotes him, and if the Birkei Yosef quotes him, he must be someone important. So he says, Dacha Dvara V'Hiskimu Lesser, and he says that that would be something that we would not permit, that would not be allowed to be done on Yom Tov Sheni. Why? Why should it be different? Why should we distinguish between Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov Sheni? So that's a big question that you need to think about. But it seems that the consensus of the Gedolei HaPoskim is that even though when you make early Shabbos, you'd be allowed to ask someone to do a malacha for you that you would not be allowed to do. And even though the Ramah says on the back end, you'd be allowed to ask someone after Shabbos is over to do malacha, even though it's still Shabbos for you. When it comes to Yom Tov Sheni, it would seem that you were not allowed to do that, and it's not necessarily the same. We don't say that these two situations would be the same. This came up with a major, major shaila when there was a get that had to be performed on Yom Tov Sheni. A get had to be written on Yom Tov Sheni. Now, what does it mean a get has to be written on Yom Tov Sheni? Get divorced the next day. What's the big deal? The answer is sometimes you have a husband who's giving a very difficult time, and he's not prepared to give his wife a get, Rachmana Litzlan, and he's leaving her an aguna, and he says, well, tomorrow morning I have a flight, I'm going to the Netherlands, and I'm never coming back. And that's it. We're not going to find him anymore. So, it's Yom Tov Sheni. We have to figure out what to do. But the problem is, we don't really have the ability to write the get because it's Yom Tov Sheni for us. So can we have a Ben Eretz Yisrael write a get for us on Yom Tov Sheni when, for us, we are B'nai Chutz La'aretz, but we're in Eretz Yisrael now. We're observing the second day of Yom Tov. Would we be allowed to do that or perhaps not? That's a major, major interesting discussion in the poskim about that. But the bottom line is that it would seem that the consensus would be that you would not be allowed to ask someone on Yom Tov Sheni to do malacha for you, unless, Reb Shlomo Zalman writes, unless it's a major makom tzorech, unless it's a major, major emergency, something really important that needs to be done, makom mitzvah. But outside of that, it would seem that this is something that is certainly not advisable. It's certainly not something that that we would encourage people to be involved with. The last thing that we don't have enough time to talk about is, if I'm machmir on a Shabbos and I decide that I don't want to do opening bottles or something like that, carrying the Eruv, would I be allowed to ask somebody else to do it on my behalf when I myself would not do it? But we'll save that, Amir Tzashem, for another time. Yeah.